understand we're being reviewed and graded by the William & Mary Law School. It's a little intimidating. But we'll proceed with the first case, NP versus Maxwell. Mr. Nussbaum.
Thank you.
I just said that so you'd be aware to mind your P's and Q's during your argument.
I know. If the court thinks it's being intimidated by the presence of all these law students, I don't know what I'm going to do. May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Andy Nussbaum. I represent the Board of Education of Prince George's County and its superintendent, Dr. Kevin Maxwell. Under the IDEA, a court reviewing a decision from an administrative proceeding is to give due weight to those proceedings, is to consider the findings of fact made in the proceedings as being prima facie correct, is to give deference to the administrative law judge's determinations as to credibility of witnesses, is to afford great deference to the judgment of education professionals, and is not to substitute its own notions of sound educational policy for those of local school authorities. If the reviewing court fails to adhere to the findings below, it is obliged to explain why. The district court below, in this case, Your Honors, did none of the things a reviewing court is supposed to do and did the one thing it's not supposed to do. It substituted its own notions of sound educational policy for those of local school authorities. Although the court, in its slightly more than three-page memorandum opinion, attempted to explain why it rejected the well-thought-out and detailed 56-page administrative decision, none of the six factors that were identified by the court, either individually or collectively, was sufficient to warrant the reversal of the administrative law judge's decision here. I'd like to first address the issue of the Supreme
Court. Your observations are probably well taken. The one concern I have, and you can address, is since the ALJ issued its opinion and the district court issued its opinion, the Supreme Court came down with Endrew.
Right.
And I think it made it pretty clear. Its standard may not be that clear, but it made it pretty clear that it did not like the standard which set the bar at more than trivial or more than de minimis. It also seems to me that that is the standard the ALJ applied several times in its opinion,
right.
Her opinion,
that's right.
And the sort of implicitly the district court. I gather your position is we can do that analysis under the separate standard, but is that the role of an appellate court to get and look? As you point out, it's 56 pages. The ALJ carefully laid out all the facts and how they related to each other, and it was balanced, but there still needs to be an evaluation of those facts and the combination of facts to determine whether FAPE or the was reasonably calculated, not the FAPE, the public education
right.
provided to NP was reasonably calculated to make a progress toward the applicable educational goals. And even that question is what is the applicable educational goal in this case could be something for the ALJ to look at. So I must say it sounds to me, based on what the Supreme Court says, that we should give the ALJ another chance. You want us to take care of it ourselves here, but I appreciate hearing your comments on that.
Yes, issue. Your Honor, thank you. Of course, you're talking about the Endrew F case that was decided by the Supreme Court after
the
rulings in these cases, both administratively and the district court. And, of course, both parties filed supplemental briefs, which you have on that. I would also add that this court, I know, Judge Niemeyer, you're familiar with it, this court rendered a decision after our supplemental briefs were filed on August the 14th, 2017, in a case called ML versus Smith, which I believe was this court's first look at the Endrew F standard after the Supreme Court decision. And just for your information, because it's not in the briefs, it's 867 F 3rd 487.
One thing that is clear, though, is not only did the ALJ issue its opinion before Endrew, the district court judge did too. So nobody really applied the standard from Endrew in this case, although arguably you could say we could make that determination here.
Well, I think, Your Honors, both, I answer reply to both. I think that even though there's two things that I would respond to that. Number one is that I think, and I'll get to this in 1 second, that the ALJ did, in fact, even though her decision was before the Andrew F. case was decided, I think that in essence she actually applied the standard that was ultimately approved by the Supreme Court in Andrew F. I'll go through that in 1 second. The other thing is that I think that this court does have the authority.
Judge Niemeyer's inquiry, as I understood it, from Judge Niemeyer's perspective, the ALJ's opinion actually applied the old standard.
No, I don't.
From the Fourth Circuit. It had to, because that was the law of the Fourth Circuit.
Well, so what happened is that the ALJ did not apply the merely more than de minimis standard. That was the standard that was rejected by the Supreme Court in Andrew F. And I would suggest, Your Honor, to the contrary, the ALJ specifically concluded that the parents who had the burden of proof in this case, and I'm quoting here, did not prove that the student only made trivial progress during his tenure in the public school. Somewhat foreshadowing, I would suggest, the Andrew F.
Just to get to and further Judge Wynn's question, at page 28 of the ALJ's opinion, the ALJ said it does require the state to provide personalized instruction with sufficient support services to permit the disabled child to benefit educationally. In turn, educational benefit has been construed to mean more than trivial or de minimis educational progress, and cites the cases, and then goes on to explain. And then the court later does the same thing. I conclude that the parents did not prove that the student only made trivial progress during the tenure.
Right.
Now, it seems to me, if that's all the ALJ concluded, it may not be a big step, or it may be, depending on what the nature of the progress expected.
Well,
and the standard, which the Chief Justice said was too low a bar.
Well, so I would point to a different section of the ALJ's decision, and I would point to pages 28 and 29, which is 93 and 94 of the Joint Appendix. And I think it's significant that the ALJ in those pages cited to two Third Circuit cases which had not been previously adopted by this circuit, but which set the standard higher than the merely more than de minimis standard.
When the ALJ reaches her ultimate conclusion, she says, I conclude, and she applies the trivial test.
Well,
she recites it again a third time near the end of the opinion. And I think it's no doubt that that's what she had in mind.
Well, I don't mean to disagree, but she says that she cites the two Third Circuit cases and for the proposition, and I'm quoting here, that the benefit conferred by an IEP in placement must be meaningful and not merely trivial or de minimis. So the ALJ understood
she understood meaningful to be more than trivial or de minimis.
I'm not arguing,
that's what our case law is.
Well, that's true. I understand that, but the fact that she adopted, in essence, the two Third Circuit cases, which had not been adopted by this circuit, but which did stand for that higher standard. In other words, those two Third Circuit cases, in essence, rejected the Tenth Circuit standard before the Supreme Court rejected the Tenth Circuit standard.
Argue that the Andrew case came down, is confusing as to which of the standards was, whether the correct standard was applied, whether the previous one, and certainly by the district court too, because it was before the Andrew case. And why wouldn't you just argue we ought to remand this case for reconsideration in light of the Andrew case?
Well, I just don't think it's necessary, Your Honor, quite honestly.
But wouldn't you win?
I would suspect that I would. But
why would you be in an argumentative state as to what this language is, trying to argue this ALJ actually applied a standard that most cases in the Fourth Circuit said you don't apply? In other words, you're saying the ALJ did not follow the law here but followed the Third Circuit, which it cannot do. I'm trying to understand, why would you do that?
Well, in part, why I'm trying to do that is because this case has been pending for so long, we're trying to reach conclusion, Your Honor.
Don't get there that way.
Well, if the choices are to affirm what the district court decided in this case or to remand it to the administrative law judge for further determination,
we have?
I would prefer that. Well, the other choice is to reverse the district court judge and affirm the ALJ's decision based on your independent review of the record below, which I understand is substantial, But I think that a review of that record would make it quite clear that that what was presented before the ALJ does.
You want us to review the record?
Well, that's you have the right to do that under the case law. I mean,
we do it every now and then, but it has to be pretty obvious for us to do it. We don't like combing through the records when they come up here.
I understand that.
Trial judges, and we let the ALJs do their job, and they're more adept at doing that. They've actually taken all the evidence, done everything in it, and then we get it. All we have is a whole record up here. That just doesn't feel good to us doing that.
I'm at the stage of these arguments where I have 5 minutes left, and I'm not sure whether there's anything left to argue if the court believes that the case should be remanded to the administrative law judge.
What you believe.
Oh, well.
What we believe, you don't.
So what I believe is what I had said, that I think that the administrative law judge's decision, again, we're here to try to bring closure to the case, and I think that the administrative law judge's decision, based on the language that she used in her decision, makes it clear that she was applying a standard that meets the Andrew F. standard as far as being a meaningful and not merely more than trivial.
Let me go back to the only place where she applies the standard that I could see. She says, "I conclude that the parents did not prove that it was and applied the trivial test." But let's assume, just for the purposes of this discussion, that we conclude that the court did apply the existing Fourth Circuit standard, which was overruled in Andrew. What course do you think is appropriate then?
In that instance, then I think that that a remand to the administrative law judge would be appropriate to have her take a look at it. If this court does not believe that she applied the correct standard, then I think it should go back to the administrative law judge, in large part because I really do not believe that the district court applied the correct standard either. I mean, for one thing, for example, in Andrew F., the Supreme Court did, although it modified the standard that to be used in applying the FAPE standard, there were many aspects of the IDEA that the Supreme Court in Andrew F. did confirm and kept into place, one of which was that the standard is reasonable, not ideal. And another one is that the standard is to be looked at, that the program and placement should be looked at prospectively. The court talks about reasonably calculated as an indication that should be a prospective look at the standard. That is what the school system was looking at when they developed the IEP and the placement. What the district judge did in this case was to ignore that prospective review and stated on at JA 57, I'm not sure what page of his, I think it was the next to last page of his decision. The court says, one thing is clear, the student has done well at the private school while he has had substantial troubles at the public school. Now, the factual, I dispute both aspects of that in terms of the facts, but in terms of the law, it's quite clear that the district judge did not review this as a prospective look forward at the IEP program and placement, but rather retrospectively said, oh, well, he did better at the private school than he did at the public school, so I guess that means the public school was inappropriate. That's not what Andrew F. stood for either. So I think if the case is going to be remanded, it should be remanded back to the administrative law judge for her to clarify her opinion.
There is a question, a procedural question. The sixth point, which seems to be the most relevant, the district court concluded, said it appears that NP made very little, if any, progress in the areas outlined in his IEP. The factual findings made by the ALJ was that NP did make progress.
Yes.
And the district court doesn't point out why, what factual errors were made by the ALJ.
That's correct. And I'm sorry, I'm interrupt.
And the question arises, if we just remand it, will the court be likely to make the same statement without explaining why he reaches that conclusion? Because it seems to me we may be up here on the same thing again, because the ALJ seemed to believe that the school system was doing an okay job, although it set a very low bar. It says, I conclude the parents did not prove that it was only trivial.
As far as the progress is concerned, yes, I believe that the ALJ at pages JA 98 through 106 discussed in detail all of the progress that she found that the student made. And our brief discussed the progress at in reading at page 38, in math at page 44, and writing at page 46. So there is considerable testimony below about progress. The other thing is that as a legal matter, the progress that we're looking at isn't all that relevant for purposes of our discussion or purposes of this hearing, because that the plan, the educational plan and the program being proposed for the student was vastly different than what he had been getting before. Even Mr. Eig, and this reference is from the hearing as well, commented, this is at JA 365 and 366, that looking back at the progress that was made before doesn't necessarily indicate whether he'd make progress going forward, because so much more was provided to the student going forward than he had received in the past. Thank you very much.
Mr. Eig.
May it please the court. I am Michael Eig on behalf of NP and his parents. I've had to sort of reorder what I was going to say. I want to deal with the Andrew F. Question, obviously, at first. Andrew F. establishes, in the Supreme Court's own words, a markedly more demanding standard. And that's at 137 Supreme Court,
well,
at 1,000.
The Supreme Court didn't like the use of de minimis or trivial. They said that was too low a bar. But then the Supreme Court says it needs to be reasonably calculated to make progress toward the educational goals appropriate in the circumstances. And,
yes.
And so it really comes down to a reasonableness test in the context, individualized context of the student.
Absolutely.
And that, in substance, it seems to me the ALJ in this case made a pretty good case, although may not have been specifically focusing on a reasonableness test. The Andrew test is not that precise. It's a pretty loosey-goosey test, but it maybe had to be a pretty loosey-goosey test because the factors that come to bear are so manifold. It's we're talking about all kinds of circumstances based on the student's condition, the student's ability to learn, the context, and so forth. And I think the only thing we can conclude with a lot of certainty is the court did not like the bar set at de minimis or trivial progress.
And Your Honor, if I may, I fully agree with everything you just said, and the court itself said it didn't use the term loosey-goosey, but it said the same thing, that it's very individualized.
I heard him say gobbledygook the other day in an oral argument.
Yes, I think in the oral argument they actually did that, Your Honor. But the difference, the important difference, I believe, that we're going to see, and it really does apply here, is here's the standard. To meet a substantive obligation under the IDEA, a school must offer an IEP reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress appropriate in light of the child's circumstances. It's the progress that's the important difference from the old Rowley, the way Rowley was being interpreted before, because that was talking about benefit. And now what the court says over and over again in Andrew F. is we have to see progress. And I respectfully beg to differ that the administrative law judge...
Wouldn't you say progress in view of the circumstances is a very relative term?
Absolutely.
In other words, for one student, progress may be the smallest gains because the student was so static in his or her learning abilities, whereas another context, progress may be even moving from grade to grade.
That's exactly what the Supreme Court said in 1982 in Rowley. Yes.
Well, sure. If the student is in the mainstream, in the classroom, they expect to go from grade to grade. So the question is, from that extreme, the very small progress because of the nature of the student's condition to more substantial progress still depends on the circumstances of the student, the individualized circumstances.
Yes, Your Honor, and I respectfully beg to disagree with Mr. Nussbaum, and I believe with maybe even you, Your Honor, that the administrative law judge in this case identify progress that this child was making. There is every indication, and once again, it's not necessarily for the Court of Appeals to look at the record to make these factual findings, but there's every indication that this child was not making progress across the board. He didn't achieve a single IEP goal for 2 years, not a single one. And the way the administrative law judge dealt with that, she said, while it is true that a student's failure to achieve goals set out in an IEP may indicate that a program is an inappropriate one, nothing in the IDEA equates educational benefit with achievement of each and every goal set forth in the IEP. We weren't arguing, and the facts weren't that he didn't achieve each and every. He didn't achieve a single one. And so that's the hard information. The test scores dropped, as you see in the record, and that's the school system's test scores, the private test scores, everything was dropping, and this student was emotionally, as we've seen, anxious, hating school, crawling under desks, was having a horrible, horrible time. And yet the administrative law judge, based upon the two things. One, the school system witness saying, well, we saw progress. They couldn't quantify it, but we saw progress, said that there was progress. And two, as we saw, the administrative law judge literally didn't believe any of the parents' witnesses, including the parents. She goes one by one through each one and says, I don't believe the parents because they have an interest in bringing this case. I don't believe the lab school witnesses because it is self-evident to me that they have an interest in this case. I don't believe the outside experts because they knew that the parents were dissatisfied with the public school placement. These are not good reasons for determining one way or the other. This is not ordinary fact-finding. And if I could direct the court to its own decision, of course, in JP versus County School Board of Hanover County, a decision I believe that both Judges Traxler and Niemeyer sat on, and direct you to what you wrote there. In his written opinion, the hearing officer stated that he found all the witnesses credible and all the experts qualified to testify within their fields. The hearing officer also specifically found JP's mother to be a very knowledgeable and credible witness, but the opinion otherwise contains no specifics about the hearing officer's view of the credibility of the witnesses. You approved the hearing officer in that case weighing credible witnesses and coming out with a decision and didn't find that to be improper in any way. In this case, this administrative law judge did the exact opposite. Before she heard witnesses testify, she disbelieved them because, most incredibly, the mother herself, who spoke to admissions made by Ms. Ramos, NP's teacher, that he needed more service and that she was concerned and she had gone to the administration. Ms. Ramos agreed to this. She confirmed that under oath. The administrative law judge still didn't believe the mother because, as she said, the mother was committed to having her son in a private school and seeking funding, and as has been said, there's no reason to have a due process hearing if that is all that there is to credibility. So we don't believe that there is a basis there. If the matter were remanded to the district court, we'd ask for some reasons, obviously.
You mean from the district court or from us?
From you to the district court, Your Honor. We'd ask.
The question is, the district court didn't give us any reasons, did he?
Well, the district. I must say that I would have written a longer decision myself, Your Honor, if I had been at the desk. But the fact is, I believe it's first the district court to give the reasons because the factors that the district court identified are right. They are correct in our opinion, and I needn't go into them right now. They're in our briefs. What we wanted to do and what we briefed was the matters in the record that support those factors that do not find their way into the district court opinion. It is a problem, Your Honor.
Haven't we at least said you need to give some deference? You've got an ALJ who spends, 3 days or so?
It was a long time, I remember.
Testimony of witnesses and bringing them forth, and even with the parents had sent that email out saying, we plan to pull our kid out of this school, we'll pay our own way, which could say, it could have the view that, well, they didn't plan to work with this IEP plan very much. You have this very detailed 60-page opinion that's out there. District court comes around, lists six factors, and you probably could dust two or three of them off right off the top of your head because it doesn't really address what's here. But we're all clear what he did not do was, it doesn't appear, gave deference to those findings and addressed them in a meaningful way so as to give us some reason why he went differently on it.
Well, Your Honor, if I may.
Spell
I'm
remand?
Sorry. Well, he did say he gave deference, in his opinion.
Doesn't that spell remand?
It could, Your Honor. What I would.
He didn't do it for the Andrew case. I mean.
Well, there are two reasons to do it here, I must admit.
That would be a basis to remand right there.
Either one could form a basis for remand. All I would want to point out, Your Honor, is that when indeed the record is, as I've characterized it, and it's right in the administrative law judge's decision, that she's not believing. There were six witnesses for the parents, and she said, I don't give them each of them any credit, any real credibility, and the reasons stated are because they're bringing, mostly because they're bringing the action, or they work in a private school. Nothing else. There's nothing else except, Your Honor, yes, she didn't note in the email that they had lost faith in the middle of that fourth grade year and wanted their kid in a private school. There's no indication that influenced them.
Would it have been helpful if the district court has said that as the reason for making this?
I can think of a lot of things that it would have been helpful. Yes.
You're making some nice findings up here, and you're coming up to some good rationale, but the problem is the district court didn't do it.
Your Honor, it is a problem. This court, Ken, is in the same position as the district court, as you've observed in a number of cases, to look at that record and fill it in. But I'm not suggesting that's your job.
You want us to be the district court?
Do I want you to be? Yeah.
The district court at this point.
Because I'm standing here right now seeking to get an affirmance, yes, I do. But I do understand the problems with that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't believe there's anything else for me to say.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Nussbaum, rebuttal.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I should be saying anything else, but I do have a couple of quick things to say.
I'm interested to see what you're going to say.
Well, I do have something to say.
All right.
First of all, with respect to this issue about what the ALJ did or didn't do insofar as the standard, I would point out on page 119 of the joint record extract, she does cite to Rowley. Of course, this is pre-Andrew F., and she does talk about Rowley. But then she says specifically, and this is what I was referring to earlier, didn't have the page in front of me, however, the benefit conferred by an IDEA placement must be meaningful and not merely trivial or de minimis. So she did say, I mean, so that when she reached that conclusion, her conclusions were based on what she had said previously. And what she had said previously.
People arguing that the ALJ applied this Andrew standard.
Yes.
Standard before Andrew came out, and where this Fourth Circuit case is going totally the other way.
She applied a standard that she took
from. Sounds to me like that is the standard the Supreme Court overruled. It's defining meaningful to be more than trivial or de minimis. That's the line being drawn for meaningful.
Right. Well, that's what she says.
The Supreme Court said that's too low a bar.
Well, I'm not so sure. I mean, when she says, and I'll leave it at that. I mean, page 119 is where I would suggest that she is making that determination. I'll just say two other things because I think I understand that we're looking at a probability of this case being remanded. But I did want to say one other thing with respect to the credibility. Mr. Ige is.
Where did the ALJ make affirmative findings of progress? What were the?
Well, she says it throughout. I mean, she discussed
she,
it.
Often talks in the negative. She often says it wasn't trivial. It wasn't de minimis.
Right.
And well, she acknowledges that some grades dropped here and there, but it wasn't that. What's your best portion?
Starting at page 98, this is of the joint record extract, which is page 33 of her decision. She has a whole section on students' progress.
I see that.
And she talks about each one of the witnesses who have testified. She talks about the this first teacher indicating that the student was making sufficient progress to meet goals. She talks about different, I don't want to identify by name because of the case is under seal, but you can see the various teachers and educators that she cites who saw significant progress. I see one citation here, significant improvement. So if you go through, now I cannot refute what Mr. Ige talked about as far as the IEP progress notes. That's true. The ALJ did refer to the teacher as being, teacher's documentation as being poor and sloppy, and I don't have anything to refute that. It was very poor and very sloppy. But there were other indications of progress that were in the record and that are in the ALJ's decision. If I can just go to credibility for 1 second, because when Mr. Ike says that the only reason that the ALJ rejected credibility was because the parents wanted the placement and that the experts were testifying on behalf of her in wanting that placement, that's not at all what the ALJ said. And I'll cite again to pages 115 to 116, where she goes into great detail about why she rejected the expert's testimony. With respect to one expert, she says that his conclusion that the student would be too distracted was based on a review of the student's records as well as a very brief observation of the student. Observations such as the one that expert engaged are not very meaningful when one is assessing a complex student. That's what she says. She analyzed this much more precisely than Mr. I gives her credit. Similarly, the other expert witness, her recommendations were made without ever observing the student in the classroom. Neither of the experts addressed the specific accommodations contained in the IEP and why those accommodations, many of which were included at the suggestion of one of the experts, were insufficient to address the student's issues. That's at 115, 116. So she clearly went into those details. With respect to the parents, and I'm running out of time, I will just say this, that the credibility issue with the parents was not that they were committed to private school, is that they weren't honest about it. They testified at the hearing that they were open to the public school, and they weren't. I mean, the evidence was clear that they had made a commitment, so it wasn't that they were committed to private school, is that they weren't honest about it. Same thing with the experts, who knew that they were committed to it, but didn't acknowledge that. So in conclusion, Your Honor, I know there was a lot of discussion about remanding this case. I do believe that under the MM case, which is in the brief, that this court does have the right to simply review the ALJ's decision, and based on what's in our briefs, I think you can affirm it.
We would have to go through, we would have to go beyond the ALJ's opinion and look at the record, the testimony, and determine whether it met the higher standard, wouldn't we?
Well, I think that, again, I know that we have disagreement about this. I think that she applied a higher standard.
We have a disagreement about? My question was basically the statement in Andrew rejecting a line drawn at de minimis or trivial.
Well, I think...
Don't you agree with that?
Yes. And I think that, again, I think the ALJ exceeded that line, but I know that that's not... I know that there's some dispute about that.
Well, how do we construe when the court finally gets to its final conclusion? It says, I conclude that the parents did not prove that it was trivial, that progress was only trivial.
Well, because right above that, she said that educational benefit means it has to be meaningful. Not merely more than de minimis, but meaningful. See, I think that when she uses the words meaningful, it's not... The court rejected the Tenth Circuit decision that said it only has to be merely more than trivial. What she said and what the Third Circuit had said previously, and some of the post-Endref Third Circuit cases also talk about this.
I thought you read the sentence and said meaningful and not merely trivial.
Right. Well, meaningful is...
It seems to me meaningful and not merely trivial. It seems to me that's the distinction between the two is the line, isn't it?
Well, I think that meaningful is more than merely more than trivial. So, but that's my reading of...
There's a gap between meaningful and the line drawn by trivial, which we would call less meaningful.
Well, I suppose, although she said it was meaningful. So
I hear,
I know, I'm out of time. So thank you very much,
Your Honor. We'll come down and greet counsel and proceed on to the next case.